Welcome to the Homesteaders of America podcast, where we encourage radical homesteading, simple living, hard work, natural health care, and real food. If you're pioneering your way through modern noise and conveniences, and you're an advocate for living a more sustainable and quiet life, this podcast is for you. Thanks for joining us on this week's podcast. Let's get started. Welcome to this week's podcast, guys. I'm your host, Amy Fuel, and I'm the founder of the Homesteaders of America organization and annual events. If you're not familiar with us, we are a resource for homesteading education and online support, and we even host a couple of in-person events each year, with our biggest annual event happening right outside the nation's capital here in Virginia every single October. Check us out online at homesteadersofamerica.com. Follow us on all of our social media platforms and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can be the first to know about all things HOA. That's short for Homesteaders of America. Don't forget that we have an online membership that gives you access to thousands, yes, literally thousands of hours worth of information and videos. It also gets you discount codes, an HOA deal decal sticker when you sign up as a VIP member, and access to event tickets before anyone else. All right, I am ready to get into this week's episode, and we are talking about land ownership and buying land for your homestead. So let's get started. So one of the things that we hear a lot of homesteaders say consistently over the last few years is, how do you afford land? How do you get into owning your own homestead and buying your own land? That can be as little as an acre or as much, and if not more, than 100 acres. Each farm and homesteader has their own, preferences as to how much land they want, what kind of homestead they want, what type of land they want. And recently on a Facebook post, I had posted about land ownership and the amount of land in the country here in the United States that's actually foreign owned. And it's a staggering, surprising amount of land here in the United States. In fact, you know, it's something that is continuing to push up land prices throughout the country. And so in this episode, we're going to kind of go through that. We're going to go through land prices, land locations, some of the things that drive up pricing, like foreign land ownership. It's a really important conversation that we need to have, especially in these times. And then we're going to kind of go through some things that can help you maybe find land, like buying undesirable land or starting small, changing laws, community buys, and how to save cash, how to implement that process. Okay, I myself, my husband and I and our family are in that process right now. And so I'm going to go through a little bit of that too. So in fact, let me start with that. So for those of you who don't know, my husband and I have been homesteading for about 10 years, pretty consistently, off and on in the beginning, but pretty consistently for the last 10 years. And, we currently live, I know you're going to be like shock and awe, but we currently live on a half acre homestead in the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains here in Virginia. And Virginia is not necessarily the most amazing state to homestead in, but most of our small rural counties don't have too many restrictions on homesteading or farming in general. In fact, Virginia is an extremely big farming state. It always has been. I grew up in the farm community. My grandfather was a farmer, and you knew all the farmers. You know, I grew up in a town that was a stop sign on a map, and everybody knew everybody, and it was a nice farm community. So when my husband and I first started homesteading, we were already on this property. We had bought this half acre foreclosure. There was already a house on it. It's in a wooded subdivision. And thankfully, the subdivision doesn't have too many restrictions. And the restrictions that they did have, we all kind of threw out the window. And we all have chickens and goats and ducks and all those fun things. But now that we've been into this for a few years, we're okay living here. You know, I tell my husband, I'm okay with living here. I could be here the rest of my life. We can do a lot on a half acre. You know, we've produced hundreds and hundreds of pounds of meat from this property. We've produced probably thousands of pounds of produce from this property. And it's been a challenge, but we've learned the property and we've worked with the property and what the property has to offer us, and we've made it work. I might not be able to grow, you know, the most amazingly abundant of sunshine fruits and vegetables, but I can grow quite a bit of food. And so, and we'll talk about that in a second, kind of adapting to your land and what you have. But right now we're kind of in the situation where we have been saving up for years to purchase land, and we feel like it's kind of that time. We're feeling that nudge. We really want to kind of get into larger land ownership. And ultimately, you know, I'll be honest with you, my goal with Homesteaders of America is to have, you know, a large enough property, 50 to 100 acres, where we could actually host the conference on the property. And we could also turn part of the property into a learning, educational farm experience where people could come and they could learn how to farm. We could do workshops, and other teachers could come and do workshops, and it would be an educational center for a lot of people. And so that's something that we want to work towards. And so within going through land, and I really know my way around land now because I've been looking for years and kind of knowing the value of land, it still shocks me to see, you know, so many people charging an outrageous amount of money for land. I mean, we're talking like millions of dollars for, you know, I saw a 25-acre property in the county over from us, and it had a large house on it, which I don't need a large house, but it did have a large house on it, probably like a 3,000 square foot house. And this estate was going for $1.4 million for 25 acres with a 3,000 square foot house on it. And I'm just thinking that land better be springing up gold, because that's outrageous, you know? And of course, now I am about 70 miles outside of Washington, D.C., which location is makes a difference for sure. But then I started looking in other locations in Virginia, and it's quite the same. In fact, and there has to be a reason, right? Like, most of these farmers are not like, oh, well, I'm just going to charge $3 million for my 100 acres and anybody's going to give me that, right? Now, there is some merit behind, you know, there was a large family farm in the county over from us. It's been for sale for years. Beautiful farm. Wish I could own it. It was 400 and some acres, beautiful farmhouses on it. Would be a great community or family piece of property. In fact, that's what it is. And I've been watching it for years, and they've never come down on their price. And for their situation, I believe that it was just truly they wanted somebody to come in that would take care of it and not just buy it and subdivide it. And so I believe there are situations where they outprice themselves because they want someone who really cares about the property to purchase it, and they're very selective in that. But more often than not, large parcels of land, and even now smaller parcels of land, are going for an outrageous amount of money because there are individuals willing to pay that. And believe me when I say it's not you and me, unless you're a millionaire listening to this, and you could be, actually. We have a lot of, you know, very, very, very wealthy people that are into homesteading, and that's awesome. And I'm so excited about that because they're doing amazing things, but we're talking about that. We're talking about the average Joe today. And, what's happening is, just, let me give you some statistics. All right. So in Virginia alone, which is where I'm located, where we hub Homesteaders of America. In Virginia alone, 526,000 acres, just in Virginia, are foreign owned by either a company or an individual. But normally, I would say 9.5 times out of 10, normally it's a foreign owned company. They're running their names under LLCs, or they are big corporations. So some of the top players in Virginia are Germany, the United Kingdom, Canada, and China. And for most homesteaders, I would say most, but not all of you guys, you might remember that China owns the Smithfield pork processing operation here in Virginia and throughout the country. And so they own possibly the most largest, in fact, pig processing facility here in the United States. And along with that came plenty of farmland in 2013. It was 146,000 acres that they bought that came along with the Smithfield Pork Operation sale. So, you know, there's quite a few countries here in Virginia that are owning land. And in fact, one of them owns a historic farm right up the road from me. Beautiful farm. I've taken pictures there. I actually have friends that manage the farm. And that is a German-owned LLC that owns that property. They don't live there. They pay a friend of mine to manage the farm. And that was bought between the 70s, 80s, and 90s. There were several different parcels of land that were bought up by the same company and now make one large farm. And so, you know, I don't have a whole big issue with foreign-owned land. Obviously, there could be some purpose in that. But it is disheartening to see how much land in the United States is being bought by foreign entities and then driving prices up for Americans that can't afford it, that would want to do actual farming on this land. Now, that's not to say some of these people aren't doing actual farming. Many of them are. But let's kind of unpackage that a little bit. So nearly 30 million acres, 30 million acres of United States farmland, that's just farmland, is now owned by foreign countries. Now, keep in mind, that's farmland and forestry, but forestry can kind of also be included in farmland, and forestry is often considered an agricultural event. So just keep that in mind. So for perspective, there's about 1.9 billion acres of land total in the United States. And of course, we know not all of that is usable. There's mountains, there's ridges. And in 1998, only 10 million acres of American farmland and land were foreign-owned. That was in 1998, only 10 million acres. So in just 20 years, we've more than tripled the amount of land that's now no longer in possession of American landowners, but now it's in foreign possession. In 2016 alone, at least 1.6 million acres of U.S. agricultural land was acquired by foreign investors. Maine and Texas are the states with the most foreign ownership of land. And of course, we know that China is now a big, big, big player in the foreign acquisition of land when they acquired Smithfield Pork Operation in 2013. And not just that, but in the last decade, Chinese investments in the agricultural sector have grown tenfold, according to the USDA's Economic Research Service. And it's not just meat and crop production land. It's also not land at all. It's also pesticide companies and seed companies as well. So China's a big player right now. And, you know, we hear talk about China through various different politics. And listen, this isn't a one side versus the other. This is just straight up politics, United States, something that we should really think about. You know, we know that the Communist Party of China's goal is to gain control of more farmland, more grain products, more livestock feed, oil seed. And when they do this, and this is stuff that's just common knowledge, this is stuff that they've stated themselves. I'm not, you know, some conspiracy theorist, believe me. But in order for them to create policies, they want to gain more acquisition of farmland, grain products, livestock feed, oil seed. And so then they can create products that support facilities and agricultural production to create large multinational trade conglomerates. And you're like, conglomerates? That's, what is that? So when I talk about trade conglomerates, that's a combination of multiple business entities that are operating in entirely different industries, but under one corporate group. And it usually involves a parent company and many subsidiaries. So that basically, so for an example, you have one parent company, one large corporation, and then that large corporation can have hundreds and thousands or less or more of subsidiary companies. So like individual LLCs, these LLCs that you see buying up farmland in the United States. So then what happens? Why is that a big deal, right? So you can see when you go through, and I'll put a link in the description of this podcast episode, you can go through, you can check your own county, you can check your own state, or you can check the entire country and see what properties are foreign owned. And when you go through them, more often than not, they are owned by an LLC. They are not owned by an individual landowner. Normally, when they're owned by an individual landowner, that owner is actually here, is actually living here, is actually contributing to our community. But most of them are LLCs. And so you can go through that link and kind of see it. So what happens is, let's take China again, for example, because this is their goal, because they've said this. Why would they need to trade? Why would they need to trade with the United States? You know, they can grow their own crops here. They can own their own companies here that have to do with livestock and crops and food. And then all that revenue is taken out of the United States and it's streamlined. I mean, just streamlined straight to China or whatever country that they are supporting at that time. So all of that revenue and money is being taken out of the United States when it could have been sold to Americans, and instead it's being sold to a foreign entity, and then that money is going to that country and not staying in our country. So there's no reason for, you know, with trade wars, low profit margins, you know, there's no reason for countries to trade with the United States because they're buying land here. They're doing it themselves. So the unfortunate part of that, there was your, you know, lesson for the day, economics. The issue is that now with low profit margins and trade wars, increasing farm bankruptcies, large farms, corporate farms, and even larger family farms, they're quickly being bought up or acquired by foreign countries because they pay the big money. And you can't blame the landowner, because if you were a landowner and you had someone offer you millions of dollars for your land, you'd probably take it. But here's what's happening. Besides the political stuff, let's kind of pull away from that, because you're here to talk about how you want to own land, right? Besides the political stuff, this act that's going on with foreign countries owning American land, and you know, guys, I know we have people who are live in other countries too, and it's happening in other countries too. It's not just America. Some countries don't even allow foreign acquisition of land, but it's driving up our prices of land, and so a lot of people can't afford land. And so you might be one of those people, and you're like, well, I'm never going to have a large property because I can't afford it. So there's some things, though. There's hope for all of us, okay? Most people are not looking for 100 acres. Most people aren't looking for 50 acres. Normally, when you're into homesteading for self-sufficiency, you're looking between 10 and 30 acres, okay? I would even say only 10 and 20 acres is what most people I have seen are looking for. Now, depending on your location, that can range anywhere from $50,000 for 10 acres all the way up to millions of dollars for even 20 acres. It depends on your location. But there are a few steps that you can take to really attain what you want. Before we go any further, though, I want to tell you who sponsored this week's episode, because we have some amazing sponsors that I want to talk about just for a quick minute. Literally take a minute of your time. The first sponsor is McMurray Hatchery. They are an incredible hatchery full of homesteaders themselves that truly believe in simple living and bringing quality birds to your doorstep. You can either order them online. I believe they might even have pickup at their location, but they are an incredible resource for all homesteaders. They even have a homestead package of poultry and waterfowl that you can order to get your homestead started. You can visit them at McMurrayHatchery.com to learn more. The second sponsor for this week's episode is Haas Tools. Haas Tools is one of my favorite companies because they truly love giving to the homesteading community, and they are ever growing as a company and business. In fact, in 2020, they sold out of a lot of their products because they really have quality products, seeds, tools for the gardener, even old-time tools that you can use on your homestead. So check them out as well at haastools.com. All right, let's get back to this week's episode. Whether it's 5 acres, even 2 acres, or on up to the hundreds and thousands of acres even. I found a property not too far from my house, actually, that was like 957 acres. It had an old farmhouse on it. It wasn't really livable, I don't think. And they were asking $4.1 million for it, which was actually cheap. Looking at the other acreage around it, that was in the $6 million range for only a few hundred acres. But anyhow, that's neither here nor there. So how do you get yourself set up for land ownership? Okay. Well, you need to start by knowing your market. Where do you want to live? And then I would challenge you to kind of look outside of that area as well, because if you are even within an hour of where you want to be, an hour, it's not that horrible. You know, it is horrible if you've never had to drive that way to get to places, but a lot of homesteaders already, us included, to get to any large city or any, you know, anywhere worth going, it can take about an hour, 45 minutes to an hour. And so kind of look outside of the area within 60 miles of a radius of where you want to be. And also, you're probably going to find that within that radius, it gets cheaper, because most of us, we say where we want to be and it's normally close to a larger town or a larger city. And when we start going away from that, it gets cheaper because obviously there's not as much work in those areas, which brings me to the next thing. Keep in mind that really, really cheap land doesn't necessarily mean that you want to live there, because oftentimes in areas, states, and even just regions of states, when you see a lot of land for a really cheap price, either there's something wrong with the land doesn't perk, it's marshy, or the cost of living is extremely low there. Or yeah, because there's no work is essentially what happens. So just keep that in mind. Of course, if you work, you know, remotely, or you're going to try to make farming your job, that doesn't really matter to you. So those are just things to keep in mind. The next thing is start small. If you don't think you're going to have enough money to afford such a large piece of land, you can start small. Land value stays, okay? Now it might increase and decrease a little bit, but we're not making any more land, guys. And so someone will always want land. Now, when you buy and sell is the trick on when you can make enough money to make it worth your time or only spend a little amount of money. But starting small is really an important thing, because, you know, I feel like we've been on this half acre and I have learned more on this half acre than I feel like I would have if we started with 10, because I've had to learn how to work small. And by working small here, that's going to prepare me for a larger property and getting even more out of that larger property. So take this stepping stone and make it your classroom, and really enjoy having just something small to maintain. And then as you can perfect that, growing into something larger. So don't be afraid to take stepping stones to the larger property that you may want. And then you might find you like the smaller property a lot better because it's less to maintain and it's absolutely doable. So those are the first few things you need to think about. The next thing you need to think about is saving up enough cash. You know, I'm all for getting a loan for land, but we have been through several economic crises in our 15 years of marriage, and we have learned that we never want to be in a place again where we don't have money. I mean, we did not have money, did not have TV, did not have cell phones, did not have internet. We had a house, a normal house from the early 90s, right? Like, with no internet access, no computer, nothing, because we just didn't have money. We had lost work during the economic bottom out in 2009. We had a new baby, and that really taught us that we'd never want to be in five different car payments and a mortgage we can't afford and whatnot. It's okay to wait and save some money, even if it's just the down payment that you save. It's worth it. You don't have to rush into anything. Take your time, and in the long run, waiting and patience will really make the whole experience better for you. And so how do you do that? Well, it really depends on your situation. I could talk hours about each individual situation, but ultimately you've got to be self-disciplined enough to put cash aside. When you take odd and end jobs that you don't need to put food on the table, put it in a savings account, put it in your safe, in a fireproof safe. Stop spending money. Cut corners where you can. You might not need the highest and bestest internet. Get the lowest one. Or maybe you can pay for a hotspot that might be cheaper than your Comcast internet or your cable internet or whatever it is. Do you really need TV? You know, those are things that you need to think about. Can you cut down on your electric bill? So those are just things to kind of process. And also, the easiest way for us to really save money has been to set a budget every month. And then if there's anything left after that budget each month, we just put it away in savings. We act like it's not even there. And that's kind of what I was saying with like odd and end jobs. Just put it away. Don't even act like it's there. Try taking on more jobs, more skills. You know, if you know how to build something, build it, sell it, do work for somebody else. That might require you to work late into the night or get up early in the morning. I've told people for years, if you want to do this thing and you want to be sustainable at it and you want to be working on your farm and working at home, you cannot be afraid to work. You have got to get up early in the morning and you're probably also going to go to bed late at night. It's just how it works until you get to that desired point where you can kind of step back and say, oh, okay, I've set up my homestead the way I want to. Now it's kind of self-managing itself and I can take a breather. So those are some things to consider. The next thing to think about is buying undesirable land. I'll tell you what, kind of changed my whole perspective when I heard Sean and Beth Dotary talk about this. They are the authors of the Independent Farmstead book, and they are also speakers at the Homesteaders of America conference almost every year. One person asked them at a conference, well, how do you afford land? And she said, buy undesirable land. Buy the land that nobody else is buying within reason, of course. I mentioned some of those reasons earlier that you might want to avoid. You know, of course, make sure it perks and make sure you can build on it. Make sure you can have livestock on it. Make sure all those things first. But the next thing is, a lot of people, they don't want to buy wooded land. And I have never really understood that because homesteading especially works very well with wooded acreage. Hello, pigs. Pigs are just flourishing. They flourish in wooded properties and wooded spaces. Now, that doesn't mean you can't clear out some of that land. Do keep in mind that, you know, some land that you buy could just be grown up because it was an old pasture that's never been maintained. You can turn that old pasture into a new pasture again, and that's okay. I would try to preserve as much wooded acreage that's naturally wooded as possible, but it's okay to clear out some land for a garden and a home. You know, it's not a big deal. But then you can kind of work with what the land has given you. And let me just tell you that most of the blog posts you find online, most of the videos you find online, they're not tailored toward wooded homesteading and wooded farming, because most people don't know how to do that. And so it is possible, though. It's very possible. We've been doing it for years. We have a very small open space to garden in. And so we've had to kind of change the way that we garden. We don't garden necessarily like normal people. I say that in air quotes. And we also have a lot of shade on our property because of the trees. And so you might have to learn how to homestead differently than other people. And that's not a bad thing, because that's just being a really good steward of the earth. You have to think that people, you know, indigenous people have been working with the land instead of trying to create land the way they think it should be for centuries. Okay. So, and again, that's a topic we could go into a lot of, but I'm just trying to hit the highs and lows here. So buy undesirable land. Undesirable land is cheaper in the long run than an open field, you know, of pasture land that's ready for you. So don't be afraid to get your hands dirty and buy that land, because it can absolutely be turned into amazing farmland. Look at Joel Salatin when his family bought the farm, that Polyface Farm, which it is now. That land was considered undesirable land. And look at it now. Look how much it is flourishing now. So just keep that in mind. You know, the next thing is thinking about doing community buys. You know, if you could grab some friends or some family members and you want a large piece of property, that when I say community buys, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're sharing the property with them, but it does mean that you're going in and you're seeing if a large piece of property can be subdivided, and then you are splitting up that payment between how many times that property can be subdivided. So the whole property, the whole contract for the land is coming out to the same amount that the buyer is asking for, but each family is paying a piece of that based on how many acres they're getting from that subdivided property. And now subdivided isn't necessarily meaning that you're going to put a subdivision on it. It just means that's the term that the county uses to mean that you're separating it into different parcels of land that different people are buying and more than likely putting a house on it. So that's a really great way to start thinking about how you can kind of help carry that mortgage or that land loan or that cash out of pocket. A lot of people are doing this now, and it's a really great option. Just make sure that everyone in your boat is rowing and not going to bail on you last minute. So let's say that you are ready to buy land, though, and you're like, well, I already own a house, and what now what? Like, I can't buy land and put a house on it and hold a mortgage as well. So there's a couple different options. Depends on your county and your state. For example, in the county I live in, if you outright own your land, so if you 100%, there's no mortgage on it, if you own your land, then you can build your own house. You can pull your own permits, you can hire your own contractors, or you can do it yourself, and you can build your own house. But if that's not the way you want to go, or even if it is, there's also the option to do construction loans. And so you can buy a piece of property, whether you own it outright or not, and then you can go through the construction loan process with your county, and that loan, they give you that loan, and that loan is dispersed to the contractors that you're hiring while you're doing the house build. And then you don't actually pay on that loan until your house is completed and you go to closing. So that's an option too. But that's still a scary option for some people, especially people like me, because I'm like, well, what if my house doesn't sell? What if the market isn't good enough? And then I have this construction loan that I can't pay because I've still got a mortgage that I'm paying and waiting for my house to sell. So one of the most common things that homesteaders are doing right now is buying land and putting an RV on it and living that way, living in the RV while they build their house. But I don't know if you guys know this or not, but a lot of states and a lot of counties have restrictions against that. My county is one of them. They don't just broadly allow you to live in an RV on a property. You actually have to go through the process of getting approved to live in an RV on the property, and not all properties are approved for RV living. So what's the next step? Well, one of the workarounds to that is to go ahead and put your septic in, go ahead and put your electric in, go ahead and put that stuff in, and then just build like a one-bedroom apartment over a two-car garage, which, you know, you might want that anyhow, right? Or building a barn with a loft apartment in it, depending on the size of your family. If that's something that you are already going to do anyhow, go ahead and do it, and then you can actually live on that property within all the guidelines of your county and your state. You might be living in a smaller space, but at least you're living there and working the property while building your house. And so that's a really great option for people that can't or don't want to live in an RV. And then finally, of course, we could go through a lot of other options, but if we did, we would be here for a couple of hours. The final thing, though, to think about is changing laws. How do we change laws so that foreign entities are not driving up the price of land sales? How are we going to change laws where, you know, we are not, we're not held back by agricultural restrictions. You know, I sent a piece of land to my realtor the other day, and it was 17 acres, beautiful piece of property. And she sent it back and she said, you don't want this land. And I said, why? She said, because you can't have any animals on it. It's under this zone where you're not allowed to have any livestock on it or anything unless it's horses, which just baffles me. Why would you buy so much land when you can't even put what you want to on it? You can't even do what you want to do with it. There's another piece of land, 25 acres right up the road from us. You couldn't make trails through the land. And it wasn't even in a conservation easement. That's totally different. This was just restrictions that previous owners or, you know, zoning laws have put on this piece of land. You couldn't put trails on it. You couldn't have cows on it. You couldn't have chickens. You couldn't have pigs. And so that's something that needs to be changed too. So whether it's worrying about the land price or worrying about the laws and restrictions, the land we can afford seems to have a lot of restrictions on it. How do we fix that? That's where I keep telling you guys to show up. We have got to show up to our local government meetings and demand change. Because if I'm living in rural America, I want to be able to do what I want to do with my land. So I would start encouraging you, don't be scared. It really, there's nothing to be scared of, especially if you live in a rural area. Show up at meetings. Talk about it. You know, when something's not talked about, it's not in people's minds. Get your community and other people in your community to join, link elbows with you and start rallies and, you know, peaceful. I'm not talking about like going all out or nothing, but I mean, unless you have to. But you know, really go to your community and say, listen, we live in rural America. These things, we want to be able to do the things that we want to do when it comes to agriculture. And you might be surprised to find out that if you had done it long ago, they may have said, okay, let's change it. Let's talk about it. Because the reality is that so many of these communities, they don't address it because there's just not enough talk about it. I have watched communities through HOA actually change laws in their zoning and in their county because so many of them supported the changes that their county or their town heard, and they made changes and they were okay with those changes. It just took enough people to talk about it and to bring attention to it to make that change. And so that's got to start somewhere, right? And why not let it start with you? So changing laws and knowing your area and saving cash and buying undesirable land, among many other things, are ways that you can actually attain farmland. Ways that you can, when I say farmland, I don't even necessarily mean a big giant pasture, you know, on a hillside or with thousands of head of cattle. What I mean is the property that works best for you. And I hope that this episode kind of encourages you to look at it and realize that it could actually be attainable for you. You just might have to put a little more elbow grease into it. Guys, thank you so much for joining me on this week's Homesteaders of America episode. I hope that it shed some light on some information for you. Maybe you learned something new. Maybe it inspired you to kind of roll up your sleeves and go at it, right? Whether it's buying land or saving up money or even making a change in your local communities, it's worth it. All of those steps are worth it. And so I hope that you enjoyed this episode. Hey, don't forget that we have our annual events coming up this year. Our Tennessee event, unfortunately, is already sold out, but our Virginia event is just getting started with ticket sales. But to remember, we are capping ticket sales this year for the Virginia event, which is held in October here in Front Royal, Virginia. And that is just due to not having enough space for people. So we're capping it right around 5,000 tickets this year, which we believe we will sell out. So get your tickets in advance. It really helps us out and allows us to plan ahead of time. And it also guarantees that you have a ticket, right? If there are tickets available that weekend for sale, you can purchase them online that weekend, but they will not be sold at the gate. So just keep that in mind if you want to show up and there's no tickets at the gate. So, All right, until next time, guys, have a great day and happy homesteading.